America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey, how's that world outside your window looking? Lots of fireworks and stuff? Oh yeah, that's because you're flying high while everything is wonderful here. It's Wonder Woman 1984, the sequel, the reason we're doing Wonder Woman podcasting right now and the most talked about movie of 2020. 2021, now it's 2021. It came out 2020, but people still talking about it, and we're just about to get into it here ourselves on post-show recaps on the Everything is Super podcast. Of course, I am your host, Chris Pine, in the form of Josh Wigler, just taking over his body. If you're feeling things, that would be why, because it's me, Chris Pine, talking as Josh Wigler. Talk to Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, life could be good.
It's better now.
It could be
because better. I see you as Chris Pine, and that's so much better, Josh.
Isn't that good? Isn't that great? Hey, who else is laughing back there? Why are you laughing at the Chris Pine notion? That's Jess Sterling. Jess Sterling showing up here to talk Wonder Woman 1984, community building co-pilot. Jess Sterling.
Indeed, I am a co-pilot, but unfortunately, I can't make this plane invisible.
Why not? So, Come on, try harder.
Never, what is it, Pedro Pascal? Never accept the limitations of nature.
Yeah, nature.
Yeah. Oh, he's so good in this, though. He's so good.
Oh, he's incredible. I would love, by the way, the power to make things invisible would be incredible. I would make so many Twitter trolls invisible. They would just go away completely. You wouldn't be able to see
them. There's like a mute button and a block button, right?
Oh, right. I already am using that to make people
also,
invisible.
Also, if you make the trolls invisible, their words still appear. So, like, you want to make them invisible.
How about this? I'll make their computers invisible so they can't use them.
Yes.
And their phones. I'm just going to make everything invisible. We're going to live in the invisible world. Can we all see? What happens then?
You make the entire world invisible?
Yeah. I'm going to do it. I'm practicing. I'm working on it. 1,000 patrons, Jess, and we'll activate our invisibility powers. That's the new goal once we hit 1,000 patrons.
Sounds great.
We're talking Wonder Woman 1984, continuing the conversation that we started last week with Wonder Woman here on our new spot Mondays for Everything is Super, because we've got WandaVision coming up soon. The WandaVision podcasting is kicking off next here on Everything is Super. We'll have a preview show. Kevin, I don't know if you knew this, but there's like going to be a Marvel special. They're starting this new series that has like origins for characters. It's going to begin with Scarlet Witch and Vision, I believe, on Disney Plus. So I'll try and watch that before we do our first WandaVision preview for sure. I think that'll be really, really fun. So that's coming up a week from today. Pretty amped up about that. But first, we got to get through Wonder Woman 1984. We promised before Everything is Wonderful, we would do Everything is Wonderful. Jess, we're thrilled to have you here talking Wonder Woman 84, because I think we need somebody here who can maybe talk me down from a ledge, talk Kevin down from a ledge. Maybe we're going to try and talk you down from a ledge, because I think we all have different opinions on this movie to certain degrees. And this is certainly a movie that everyone's got a big opinion about, Wonder Woman 1984. Before I even watched it, the internet told me what to think, and I didn't know what to do. It was very confusing and very alarming, and I'm very impressionable, so I got scared.
I, I,
just really love the idea of such a young, impressionable Josh.
I got afraid. Winston. I got afraid. Everything was not wonderful as I was like, oh, well, I'm going to have to give an opinion on Wonder Woman 84. What do I? And then I gave an opinion and some people were like, how dare you? And I was like, I've displeased people. I don't like it.
Welcome to the internet discourse.
It makes me nervous. So we'll talk about that journey. We'll get into all of that. Before we do, let's take a quick second to thank our sponsors for this episode of Post-Show Recaps. Geico, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Building policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. I don't even know where to begin with Wonder Woman 1984.
I have a place. One, I want to point out the amusement because it didn't occur to me until you mentioned Pilot that I love the now twice that Jess has been on this podcast has been about people who fly. So yes. I love the idea. Jess was on here for Captain Marvel Pilot and now we're on here for Wonder Woman 84, yes. Which has Chris Pine, Steve Trevor as a pilot. So whatever next flying Marvel thing or DC thing, we gotta have Jess. This is the standard now.
Obviously. Anytime there's a strong female lead, you can always tap on me to come in.
And talk or about a it. Pilot.
Yes.
So like if the Green Lantern show takes flight.
There it is. Or the Green Lantern movie. The Ryan Reynolds movie, Jess.
Oh god, no.
Jess, are you prepared to talk about Ryan Reynolds as the Green Lantern in a gray motion capture suit that they turned into a Green Lantern suit?
I love Ryan Reynolds, but that was bad, man.
Oh, he knows it's bad. He's well aware.
So bad.
It ain't good. It's really bad. It's not good.
I'd rather talk about him as Deadpool.
Yes.
Just before we get into 84, do you want to hit us up with your thoughts on Wonder Woman writ large, whether it's the character, whether it's the experience of seeing the movie for the first time, and like, what does any of like having those experiences, how, if at all, did that impact you heading into 84 and your overall enjoyment of this movie?
So we talked about this a bit in the Captain Marvel podcast, but I'm not a natural like comic book person. I've read a little bit of Superman comics growing up and that was pretty much my experience. Not like a ton, but enough to know, you know, the stuff with Superman. So I didn't know much about Wonder Woman. I watched the first Wonder Woman movie for the first time, actually Christmas Eve, because I wanted to be able to watch 1984 on Christmas. So I really enjoyed the first movie. I thought it was great. I think you have to, is it Gal Gadot?
I think it's Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot, I believe is
Gal Gadot. Okay. How it's pronounced. She's fantastic. She's the perfect person to play Wonder Woman. I mean, I don't know if this is a hot take. I find Steve to be very boring, very bland. I just don't see, I thought he was great in the first movie. I thought like he did a good job as being a companion for her into kind of helping her, you know, get into the human world and whatever all of that is and right. Learn the lessons she needs to learn and be her partner along the way. I thought that was great. Loved the first movie. Fantastic. I went into this movie with like pretty high expectations and I just felt like, it's a fine movie. I'm not like the Twitter trolls who are like, this is the worst crap I've ever seen in my whole life. My life is ruined. No.
Not
it's
for this
fine.
Reason. There are other reasons.
Yes.
No, it's not Wonder Woman that did this.
No, it's a fine movie. There are like, to me, there are a lot of points that I just like, I have questions of like how this is possible, how this worked with this and with that and with that. And like, we can get into all of that. I think the things for me that worked very well were Pedro Pascal as Max Lord. I thought he was fantastic. I loved Kristen Wiig in this. I thought she was also very good. I didn't like that they brought Steve back. I thought, again, I think we can either not have him at all or like find a different way to have her make a wish that she has to then give up or something. Like, I just didn't see the point of bringing him back. And as someone who had just watched the first movie the night before, it really undercut the whole point of his death. Like, he dies and there's a huge impactful moment. And then when he just comes back to life, it's kind of just like, well, why do I care that he just died then? You know?
Yeah.
Overall, I thought the movie was fine. I know people complained about the length. I felt the length more in the second half than I did the first. I thought it wasn't like, I mean, we've watched like, I just watched the extended edition of Lord of the Rings for like 3.5 hours. Like I can deal with a longer Wonder Woman movie. I just think like the acting wasn't my problem. It was more of like some of the storylines that I had an issue with.
Yeah. Kevin, we talked about Wonder Woman extensively the other week. You very directly, you like deliberately said, like, don't watch 84 until after we've podcasted about Wonder Woman. And I had managed to avoid spoilers. I managed to avoid, you know, the discourse for the most part, other than knowing it was polarizing. Navigate that for me, your experience with 84, both, your feelings towards the movie, all of the sort of like the space that we're in surrounding 84 right now.
Yeah. It's a space that, you know, like Diana at a certain point, you know, pre this movie, just wanted to like be away from humanity and not have to deal with them ever again. Like she does in Justice League, was like, I forget it. I don't want to ever talk with you or help you people. After the discourse happened, like for me, I saw, you know, I'd seen Wonder Woman before. I watched it and then watched 84 almost like immediately afterward. We watched it, I think, like as soon as we were able to. So for me, I came out of that movie and I really enjoyed it. And I think going into the internet discourse is sort of where I lost my own mind about everything. Because here's the thing. After the end of that movie, I was like with Jess, where I was like, it's fine. It's leaning towards good for me more than it is towards bad. So like, I was just like, yeah, I enjoyed this movie. I like this movie. I wasn't going to say it's a masterpiece. And even if we were giving it a rating, it's not going to come near the first one. It's definitely not as good as the first one. But the internet discourse made me so annoyed and frustrated and like angry that it just made me want to fight and defend this movie harder. Which is a thing people have. They dig their heels in. But like the discourse around it to me is insane. Like the idea of people saying this movie is like awful or it's like just bad. Of course, like I'm just like, you need to watch more movies. Literally coming off of doing a podcast about The Last Airbender, I'm like, get out of my face with that take. Like, you don't know bad.
Which, by the way, has not come out as of this recording, as of this podcast dropping, but you can look forward to Kevin and I joining Zach and Jacob railing against M. Night Shyamalan's The Last Airbender on Hang In There, coming this week. If that's I think appointment listening. Very good podcast, really, really fun.
And the things that people were picking out were just one of those things where I was just like, what? Like a lot of the complaints that I saw, not necessarily, I don't think from what Jess said, is the complaints she had. So like, that's great. But and we can talk about that. But like some of them where it was just like, someone pointed out where it's just like, this song came out in the fall of 1984. This movie is taking place in July of 84. Why is this song in here? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that's the type of stuff that like is looking for like the you're like, you are scouring for nits to pick at that point.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. It's, and then there's like other stuff. Like, I know that that one thing and like, a person I really like and follow and respect, you know, pointed out something about the rail line where it's just like that rail line wasn't around until 88. And like, as that, as if it's like destroys the film. And to me, like anachronisms like that, unless it's like literally world breaking, it's fine. Like it happens a lot. It's okay. Like it doesn't destroy anything in the movie. Like you look at some Marvel tech, right? Like tech is far beyond the existence because also the reality of that world changed with the existence of certain people. You could make an argument that the same thing is happening here to an extent, but like stuff like that, like that's the thing I saw a lot of people pointing out, and like those stuff, I'm just kind of like, come on. And then to say like the movie is bad or awful because of that, I think is wild. The plot stuff we can talk about. We can talk about all the other stuff. I'm down for that. And it's just weird because like, again, my response to this movie is like, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fine. I liked it.
Yeah.
But like the negative response is one to the point of me like literally just throwing on my gold plated winged armor to be like, all right, let's do this.
You go in. Yeah. yeah. I watched it after dodging all of the spoilers and most of the discourse, other than knowing it was polarizing. And like, my experience watching the movie was like, I was really enjoying myself. I just enjoyed Pedro Pascal so much. I thought it was great. I think Gal Gadot and Chris Pine have such great chemistry together. And like, I loved like the color of the movie. I had one person tell me like, you have to admit that the final fight was so underlit and hard to, it was fine to watch on my, I was watching on my computer. It looked totally fine to me.
Same.
I mean, Kristen Wiig as Cheetah was a lot. Like, when Kristen Wiig goes full Cheetah didn't super work for me in like the final incarnation of the character. But that's okay. That happens from time to time. But overall, I walked away from it like being, I enjoyed the idea behind it. I thought it was super, super, super comic booky in this idea of like, the wishes destroying the world. And like, if you start to like pull on the thread of that stuff, like, yeah, like how did the world not just end inside of like 5 seconds once everybody starts making their wishes? But it felt to me like something that you would just read in a comic book. Like, it felt to me like it was a storyline of that mold and was not far field. And I enjoy a movie that's like a little bit lighter and is clearly having fun and has like a hopeful message, especially in like this shitty time that we're living in. So I tweeted out, oops, I loved Wonder Woman 1984 with the shrug face. And I love a lot of stuff, and I get to be hyperbolic. And it was literally, that's what I tweeted as soon as the credits started rolling. I really enjoyed the experience of watching the movie. And when I unleashed like my first like knee jerk reaction to it, I didn't do any of the work of like spending much time like thinking about the movie hard. I was just still feeling it. And I think for me, where I'm at right now is mostly still in that camp of like, I had such a good time watching the movie. It was so nice to like see like a big budget new movie in 2020, even in the capacity that we saw it, you know, alone in our homes, or, you know, with our loved ones in our homes, or however you saw it. The lucky few who are safely able to get to theaters right now, like, you know, that's great. But for me, like, to have a movie that was anticipated, that I finally got to see, that experience was just overall so positive for me. And then you start thinking about some of the ways in which the movie either has like actual like big issues, or some things that like stick in your side to a certain degree. I do think that there's a lot to talk about with like the Chris Pine stuff, and I think when it comes to like legitimate grievances against the movie, I think that is the biggest area for me where like I'm coming around to that idea of like, why did he have to invasion of the body snatchers his way into somebody else's human
form? It's freaking magic. Just have him pop up. Well, he doesn't need to take over someone else's body. Nuclear
warheads popping up all over the world.
Yes.
Out of nowhere.
A nuclear missile can show up, but a human just can't just pop out of thin air and someone, you know what I mean? Someone just literally dies because some guy wishes it. Like, anything is possible. Just have him come in randomly. He doesn't need to be some other dude. Like, that poor guy, he gets his body back after multiple days of not having it, and he's like, what the hell just happened?
He gets his pirate suit back on. He looks great. I know.
Yeah, I will say, like, so this is an interesting one, because this is one that I did not think about as it was happening. And then afterwards, the discourse around it, you know, I've been, like, listening to, and, like, I still get it. But it's one of those things where it's been amplified to the point of like, well, this is the biggest problem and therefore the movie is bad because of it. But it's such a small like plot device. And I think the reason they did it is, one, it's a trope that exists. So like, people do it because it's like, oh yeah, that's a thing that people are familiar with, right? I'm not agreeing like that's a great reason to do it, but that is the reason why people do it in movies, is because it's a pre-existing trope. So people are way more willing to accept it because they've seen it. For example, this was a movie from 84. While this show came out later, Quantum Leap, his entire plot structure is about that. In fact, I think they purposely did it that way because Quantum Leap is notorious for the person, once Sam leapt into the body, going over to the mirror and like looking in it, and you see the two versions of himself. So I think that was directly an homage to that as well. So I think that's a part of the reason why, is again, like pulling out something from a time period or an era that they were trying to like play with, and because of the familiarity of it. So I think that's why it happened, versus just, he just appeared. So like, I think that's why that happened. I think the discourse around it is really interesting and brings up a lot of interesting points, but it's so weird. And I feel like it's good to talk about it, right? Where I, again, bump against stuff is because of the level of like, well, this ruins the movie and makes it bad, is so high. Like, the movie isn't about that part of it. Like, if like for me, if we want to talk about Quantum Leap, which is an entire series based upon the idea of hopping into other people's bodies and warping their reality, sure, let's have the discussion about that. And I think we can further have this discussion. But when it becomes like the key factor of like, well, this movie is awful because of this one small plot device, I'm like, that is extreme.
But I can imagine I can imagine being something of like a game ending hangup. Because I think, like, if you spot that immediately, and a lot of people did, and a lot of people, like, latched onto that as soon as it happened, and it took me until after watching the movie to even, like, really think about it. Like, I can imagine that now, like, you're watching the entire movie, and every time Chris Pine is on screen, it's just like, that ain't him. Mm-hmm. That's some other dude. That's Cliff.
I think the problem is also that for me personally, it wasn't that it was just that one thing. It was like multiple things that you can like point to. Like if that was the only thing that like I didn't really care for in the movie, that's one thing. But for me, there were multiple things that I had issues with. And so it kind of just adds to the pile of reasons that I wasn't as high on the movie as some people were.
Yeah. And I think being that's totally fair, one of the big ones. Right? Like to me, again, like that's fair. There's a lot of things that I think add to it. But like you ended up on a spot where you're just like, yeah, it's fine. Like it's a fine movie.
Right. And I think you're right. And I
that's my point.
I think Mike Bloom kind of said it best too in the Discord. He mentioned that like being that it's was 2020 when it came out, people are in a bad mood. Like people are in a really bad place. Yep. And they want things to hate and they want things to kind of take out that anger and the frustration on. I mean, I kind of get why that is the way it is. And this is the only movie that's like coming out, quote unquote, right? There aren't many movies coming out. Soul came out on Disney, coming out. There aren't many movies coming out. So people are going to, you know, like criticize them very heavily. And I think this movie suffered as a result of that.
Yeah.
But that is one of the things that really kind of got under my skin about the movie.
Yeah. And I totally get that. And I agree. Like, I think when I said that too in the Discord, and you know, in conversations with Josh and stuff, where I feel like this movie did suffer from the fact that everyone is angry at the end of 2020. Mm-hmm. Everyone's upset. They want something to lash out at. They're at home, but a lot of them aren't with their loved ones. And they went to watch this movie. And this is the first movie, big blockbuster movie that everyone has been seeing since for months now. And so it unfortunately got the ire of a lot of that stuff. And mood impacts experience and emotion. Like, that's just how it is. Look at what I'm doing. I'm also upset, frustrated, and angry. And what I could have just overlooked as like, the internet's being the internet again. And instead it made me angry and made me want to like lash out. So like we all are doing it. We're all experiencing it. But like for me, it's the level of it all. And I do agree. Like there's a lot to be discussed. And I think it's true. Like having him, my biggest issue is with the idea of like Chris Pine in that person's body is that it didn't become a harder point of discussion amongst the characters. I think that's where it loses it for me a little bit. Like after hearing the talk about it, I think if that became a bigger point versus Diana just deciding necessarily like she needs her powers, therefore she'll reset her wish for that reason, I think people would have been more okay with what happened. But the fact that like it wasn't as heavy addressed is where I think a lot of people bump against. And I know like you want your heroes to be complex, and I think that would have been interesting to address. But it's also one of those weird things because like I know like we're not the heroes. The heroes should be better, depending on who we're talking about, because the Guardians are not that ever. But if I was given like the same choice, right, is that something that's running through my mind? If someone was popped into someone else's body and it's someone that I deeply loved and cared about, and I had the opportunity to be like, well, they're going to be here now. And, you know, this is the situation. What would I do? And it's a hard choice to an extent.
But correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you guys know Wonder Woman better than I do. Is she not supposed to be like this moral compass? Like, isn't that who she is as a character? She has like these huge morals from what I understand of the character. And so for me, like that should be a huge thing for her.
Sort of.
If that's what the character is.
Sort of. And that's where we get into the hard parts of it. I think when you look at the DCU and their characters, you have Batman who exists in a far, far more gray area. And you have Superman who exists in a far, far, far more like moralistic area, right? Wonder Woman has shifted and changed as a character so much because a lot of the people who have been writing her over the years weren't sure how to direct her. She's gone from being someone who's completely a pacifist who doesn't like fight at all, to someone who is a warrior, like through and through. Like if you look at the comics, if you talk about the Max Lord storyline, spoilers for a decades old comic at this point, like I think 14 years. But there's a
this movie deals with Max Lord very differently than yes. he's dealt with iconically in the comics. And Kevin will reveal that right now. Yes. So if you don't want to know, because it is iconic, it's pretty well known in comic book circles. But if this movie inspired you to like go check out the Max Lord era of Wonder Woman, maybe you want to skip ahead a couple minutes.
So in this storyline, Max Lord doesn't have necessarily wish granting powers, but mind control powers. And you find out like he actually implanted in Superman some time ago and has been using Superman without anyone knowing to like do terrible stuff. Like he beat Batman up really badly and sent him to the hospital. And so when this all gets revealed, Wonder Woman confronts him and he activates Superman and they start fighting each other and Wonder Woman's fighting Superman and it's a really good fight. Like the actual fight itself is like pretty awesome. And she does a good job, like the two standing toe to toe, and she has him down for a second. She goes to Max and has the lasso of truth around him and is just like, call him off. I like, you know, let go of your control. And Max is like, no. And she's just like, how do I stop it? How do I, you know, break the control? And he's just like, kill me. And so like there's a pause and then Wonder Woman just goes and snaps Max's neck. And so that's how she deals it in the comic.
Whoa,
so again, if you look at a version now, though, if you look at the version of the character, how it's being written now, and it was inspired by this movie, she is more of a moral compass. She is more of a person who will lean a little bit more towards a Superman than the Batman. For depending again,
looking at the first movie too, that's who she is.
Correct.
She hates guns. She's a pacifist. She wants to stop the war. You know what I mean? That's who she is in the first movie. So I think that going from that to this movie, even if we're just looking at the movies and we're not looking at the comics, I think her character, it's not in line with her character for this movie to deal with it that way.
But you also have the same thing, because again, the time period of this movie, right? Like if the first movie was influenced by Superman, the first Superman movie, this movie is heavily influenced by not just Superman 2, but also Spider-Man 2 and a lot of ones that deal with this trope. But also, I think the 80 period, right? This movie felt like a movie that is happening or came out during 1984 in tone and style. Like with its goofiness, with its not explaining everything in the way those movies did at the time. And so like, that's another thing that I think for me, I liked is that it just felt like a movie that exists in the 80s. But in Superman 2, the most moral person in the world, you have these instances where they're faced with these questions and these conundrums. And it's like, what do we do? And I think it's part of the character journey to have them decide not to. I do think the hiccup is not having that be the reason for Diana about the body swap. Mm-hmm. If you look at Superman 2, you know, he gave up his power so he could have a life with Lois Lane, and there's terrible stuff happening in the world. Like General Zod and the rest are taking over, and he's literally ignoring it. Like it is stated that Superman knew it was happening and was just like, I'm ignoring it because I just want this. And then obviously at the end, he's just like, I can't have this. I can't do this. And you know, he gets his power back, very similar to here. So it is like a reflected storyline I think they're pulling from. So yes, I do think if they had her address it more, it would have worked a lot better. But it's a tough thing to have your heroes be completely moral and completely perfect all the time. And that's sort of the joke I made, where it's like, be perfect or be nothing. Because a lot of people now want the heroes to be completely perfect, which is ironic because that's what people always didn't like about Superman. So it's weird to have
Boy Scout.
Yeah, it's weird to have the flip over all of a sudden of just like, well, the hero needs to do everything right all the time. And I'm like, okay, cool. But like people didn't like that for a very long time. And if we want to swing that way, that's fine. But that becomes a weird issue. And again, I'm not even saying like,
yeah,
the movie shouldn't have done that.
I think my argument is more of like, not necessarily how Diana reacts to it, but more that like, why? I understand like you're saying it's an homage and everything, but then don't even make him have a body snatcher moment. Just have him appear instead. And we kind of sidestep the whole problem to begin with.
Yeah.
But it's just one of the many things. Like you were saying, oh, it feels like an 80s movie. And I'm like, in everything except the soundtrack. And I know that's something you even said yourself that you liked, that it wasn't like campy and everything. But I would have preferred at least one, like give me one major 80s hit. When they have the whole moment where Steve is like trying on all the iconic wardrobe, by the way, the wardrobe was spot on,
so
for
good.
Me.
Yeah.
But like you have the moment where he's trying on all those outfits and he's like, I'm sorry, this was a little bit too cheesy with the escalator of it all. Like that was like a bit much for me, but like put it in an 80s song there. There was an opera
Wake
music.
Me
where
up
are we?
Before you go.
Exactly. Yeah. Any anything, a huge hit, just throw in one.
For sure.
Give me one.
And I can agree with that for sure, Jess. For sure. Like, I agree with you. I would have liked like at least one like pop hit of the time to like really cement it. I think where I was stating is just like, I'm glad they didn't go into the realm of just like, it's just all 80s hits all the time.
Yeah, this isn't Guardians of the Galaxy. Right, I understand. Right. Like, that's not what we're doing here. But like, even one in the sillier moment of the movie would have been nice, because you have the moment. Like, why is there opera music playing when he's like learning about escalators? What is happening?
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I say this as someone who, I adore Chris Pine. I love Chris Pine. I think that he adds a lot whenever he's involved. I think the chemistry between Diana and Steve in this movie is actually really great for me. Like, I think that they work really well together. But I wonder, and I know that this is another issue too, is like, so Diana's just like been pining for Chris Pine since he blew up in World War One. A lot of time has passed,
like, and like, she's just still years? Thinking,
I know he was above average and he's Chris Pine, but that's it. And one of the things that I dislike about it, aside from like the obvious stuff, is I think one of the strengths of Wonder Woman as a character and as a potential franchise, and something that they've obviously established here now doing Wonder Woman 1984, is that like Wonder Woman 3 could be like Wonder Woman 1952. You know, it could be whatever. Like, you could be hopping all over time. And so I think to have her have been like wistful over Steve for all this time becomes a little bit limiting for some of like the other like periods of history that you could hop into with Diana, like, and I think is a real disservice to the character in terms of like how she could have like moved on with her life. I think for me, what I would have really enjoyed, just to like fanfic this out and like do a rewrite, is, you know, she's hanging out with Kristen Wiig, they're talking about all the things, she's like, she's doing she's doing like the wish of, you know, instead of like, I wish like Steve was back or whatever, like tie it more into everything that was going on Thymascara, and like have her be like thinking back on like Robin Wright, be like, man, I really wish that Robin Wright was still here. And then Robin Wright gets to occupy that full Chris Pine role, and you get more Robin Wright, because she's like the best character in both movies, even though she's in like 5 minutes of each. And then you have like the, like, you get to repeat the Wonder Woman fish out of water, but in a way that's like much more connected to Wonder Woman's history with another Amazon coming into something closer to the modern day. I would have really loved that. And I think that that opens things up to like have Diana's life be a little bit more vibrant and less sad, you know, in the 70-ish years between the end of Wonder Woman 1 and Wonder Woman 1984. So the more that I've thought about that, the more I've been a little bit bummed about that way in which Chris Pine's inclusion in 84 throws things back a little bit more than what I was feeling. Like, when I think about it, that is a thing that like I feel like I don't know exactly why they feel like they need to have both of these movies be the Diana and Steve story. I think that there's still a way to have the basics of this story about wishing for something that can no longer be, and tell that in a way that I think is better and more interesting, and with a character who was underexplored in the first one.
I couldn't agree with you more. Like, I got frustrated mainly because I didn't, like I said, I didn't mind Steve in the first one, but then to me, like, as a woman, to like have Diana's story like somewhat taken from her and like have to be connected with Steve all the time is really frustrating. I want to watch a strong woman like kick ass. I don't want her to have to rely on this guy and be pining over this guy for like 70 years. And not only that, but like, I could have had more Kristen Wiig. Like, I don't know the whole Cheetah backstory. I don't know any of that, but I think that to have that final battle between the two of them mean more, we need to connect Diana and Barbara a little bit more, make them more friendly towards one another, you know, set that relationship up a little bit more. And obviously people are complaining about the length of the movie, but like, find a way to make that relationship stronger, quicker. And maybe that's without Chris Pine there, you know, have those two be the central storyline. Josh, I love your idea of having Robin Wright back in the movie. She was amazing. And like,
I keep calling her Robin Wright because I can't remember.
I don't know her name either. The one with the long blonde, like, great. That was awesome.
Antiope. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Have her back in it. Like, have strong women at the helm. It's just frustrating to kind of see, like, it's like, does this movie pass the Bechdel test? Like, honestly, does it? Because it's, we don't need the guy there. We don't need him. Like, I know, I know maybe it takes away from like her learning to fly and the whole like that whole thing. Find a different way to make that happen, because that was pretty great. But like, I just want to see strong women, and I just felt like having him there took away from it for me.
So yeah, I don't disagree with anything you're saying here. What's interesting is that like, I think everything you guys are saying is basically how to make a better version of this movie. And I think that's totally fair, right? Because we're ending up on like, this movie's fine. And like, I think there's ways that we could have changed the plot to make it better. The plot structure that they have, like if I think about, I agree about the relationship thing. I'm kind of like over that. This is a weird comparison, but when we've been doing a Disney rewatch in my household, we just got a Hunchback, and I was dreading getting to Hunchback because I was like, oh, I remember this movie sucks. And because like the Quasimodo doesn't get with Esmeralda and she gets with this like rando,
what?
Blah, blah, blah.
Spoilers, I haven't seen it.
That's an even older movie.
Josh. Man.
But like, like that's something as a kid I had this mentality of, right? And then like as an adult, I'm watching this movie and like my views and the world has changed in how I see it. I would have preferred, like, honestly, Esmeralda and Quasimodo not getting together, I am fine with, and I was okay with, and I did not want them to when watching this movie. But they didn't do enough, I think, for Phoebus and her to get together. And I would have preferred it if she didn't end up with anyone, because that didn't have to be her story. Like, Esmeralda's story is completely not about that when you look at that movie. And I would have preferred that outcome. And I think here's a great example of that, where we didn't necessarily have to have Diana's story be tied to Steve, the male character, right? Like, there's ways to change that. That all said, I think structure-wise, what they were going for, and here's where I get into my stuff about it, I think it works in what they were trying to do. Because, like, you look at what Diana is in this story presented, and I don't think it's super far off from where we could have ended up. She lives on an immortal island, so grief and loss is not something they're probably super-duper familiar with to begin with. And you have her mentor dying right before she left, someone she did not get to say goodbye to either. She ends up in Man's World. She can't go back to Themyscira. She ends up with this new group of friends, her first love ever, and he dies, and she doesn't ever actually get to say goodbye to him, because when he leaves in the first one to go fly the plane, she can't hear properly, and they never get a real goodbye. She never gets to say goodbye to this guy, her first love, so he's gone. The other friend she's with, she watches, and this is actually a moment I loved so much, is when they showed her pictures, and they showed her with old Etta Candy. Like, it really hit me right in the heart. I thought that was so sweet. But like, she's watched all her friends die. So you end up with a Diana here who is immortal and outlives people, and watched everyone she had came to connect with die in front of her. So she decided, I don't want to do this, and has no friends. And that's how the movie starts off. You end up with an isolated Diana who is chosen because of everything she's experienced, because of her own immortality and her own sense of loss, and not understanding maybe how to deal with that, to just close off completely. So to me, that's why, and it works for me, that her and Barbara couldn't be friends at the start, because of the story they're trying to tell for that character's journey about going from isolation into opening up and becoming more part of the world than she was at the beginning. And I think that's a journey they were doing. Do I think they could have done a different journey and done it better? Sure. I mean, I think what you guys are saying totally makes sense. It would be a different story and a different thing that they're doing. And you structure the story from that. Like, you go from there. But in what they're presenting and what they're doing as far as the character journey itself, everything I think that happened made sense. Steve coming back, I think we could, of course, go back and forth on, like, does that need to happen? But in terms of, like, the loss to help her say goodbye, a thing she wasn't able to do before, I think works, in my opinion. And again, in terms of, like, the character and where they were going with it. And the same thing with Barbara. I wish there were more scenes with her and Barbara, but there was enough that happened that it didn't feel wild or crazy to me that they went from like friends to enemy. I think we saw them talking. Mm-hmm. We saw them talking a number of times throughout. Diana's sometimes a little bit demanding of Barbara, mind you. But like, I, for me, I don't think it works, like, again, spectacularly, but I think it works enough that it didn't destroy the story structure for me.
Yeah. I want to talk about Barbara.
Yes, me too. Okay.
I want to talk about Barbara. I want to talk about Kristen Wiig.
Oh, no.
No. No.
Your face.
Yeah, your face is scary because.
Well, so one of the things, like, there have been, like, some of, like, the backlash, and, like, some of what I heard directly was, like, how could you say, like, Amazing Spider-Man was so cartoonish when, like, you know, like, Barbara as Cheetah is, like, at least as bad as Electro in the Amazing Spider-Man 2. And to that, I'd say, first of all, like, you know how I feel about Electro in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. So if like your argument is like, this is like Schwarzenegger, Mr. Freeze level bad, like you're missing with me because I love that shit. So like, first of all, that's a losing argument because I'm going to say, oh, they're going for something. I like it when they go for something. But I thought, like the scene that I would point to is like when she's beating up the guy, like that was like such a dark scene. Like that was like a really chilling scene, and seeing Kristen Wiig do that was kind of powerful, for me. I don't love the design of Cheetah by the end. We're going into like Venom teeth territory, Goblin teeth territory. And that's not my favorite thing. Just as like a visual thing, like that's tough for me. But I really thought that Kristen Wiig did a much better job in this than I thought when they announced that she was going to be in it. Jess, the floor is yours. Talk to us about Kristen Wiig as Cheetah.
I love her. I love her in the beginning. I love the character they set up for her. The things that bother me about the Barbara stuff and the Cheetah stuff is more of like the technical storyline questions. I think she plays the character very well. You know, I think it totally makes sense for her to want to be like Diana, being who she is in the moment she's in, and the guy who like harasses her. It makes so much sense for her to want to be Diana, the strong, powerful woman who's self-confident, who people like. I get why she wants that. The Cheetah design, you know, it's fine. It's not like my favorite. But my questions are more like the storyline stuff. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm pulling threads here, but like, okay, she wants to be like Diana. That is her wish. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Diana doesn't have hordes of people coming onto her on the street trying to hit on her. Like, that was weird to me because, yes, of course, Diana's beautiful. We all obviously, right? We can all see that. But she doesn't have guys like, hey, baby, you want to go get a drink? Like, on the streets constantly. That was a little bit much. I know maybe it's just like they're being hyperbolic with it. That was a bit too much for me. And then how does she become Cheetah? Like, she only gets one wish. Like, where did the second wish come from? Wait, that I don't understand.
Well, doesn't Pedro Pascal have like the terms that he makes, Max Lord makes when he's saying like, all of you out there in the world, give your wish. And then he like turns around and is like, and give me your health and your stuff and make that one over there super powerful.
Give her
and
your
strong.
Rage, give her your prowess. Yeah.
And so like, but, I guess her body is like,
that
being,
it?
Yeah. And her body's like, well, I'm wearing like cheetah-ish clothes right now. Okay. Let's just go full cheetah.
It, like, basically, he grants your wish, but he takes something for himself, right? That's how Diana, like, loses her powers, right? Yeah. Like, it takes something that is you know, essential to you or whatever.
Give and take.
Just was weird, and it didn't really make much sense for me because she already granted her wish, which, again, I didn't really understand to begin with. But I get the strength that her powers make sense. But she doesn't have the power of, like, magnetism for men or something.
So, I rewatched this movie before coming into the podcast, right? So, like, I knew a couple of the things to, like, I guess, look for just because of the internet discourse around stuff. So this is an interesting one. So when Barbara actually makes her wish, she says that she wants to be strong, sexy, cool, special, like Diana, but she says specifically strong, sexy, cool, right? So like those are the parts that is the wish coming true. It's not necessarily the like Diana. The like Diana is the powers. She gets powers like Diana, but strong, sexy, cool is what she wished for. So that's why people were paying attention to her a little bit more. And obviously, I think for me, I agree with you. I think everything was working for this character in terms of like how that changes her. Cause like when like, because Kristen Wiig is not unattractive either, and she was charming, she was smart, but she was also reserved. But once you had this boost of confidence as a person who's also like does not have confidence, but when I was looking better and working out more and I got attention, I was a whole different person. I get that, right? Like I understand that aspect to it. The part where it does get tricky is, of course, the ending where it's like she becomes a cheetah. And the easy answer before I go into a technical answer, right? Before I try to give a technical answer, the easy answer is because that's what she is in the comic books, right? Like, that's, which is,
well, she says like an apex predator or something like that. Yeah. She can point to that if you really want to.
And which is the thing. So on when she's on the plane with Max,
make me a cheetah. I want to be a cheetah.
When she's on the plane with Max,
I want that.
She makes the comments about that because Max was saying like he's the Dreamstone now. He gets to make the rules,
right?
And so. And again, this is the wonky part of the movie because it's a Dreamstone and what are the rules? What are the rules? But we don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's a very like comic booky Silver Age thing. So he basically says like he gets to make whatever changes he wants and gets to do what he wants, but he's also a jerk. So I do think the transformation into Cheetah is unfortunate because like it is, she looks like that because she looks like that in the comics and she becomes a literal cheetah. I also would have preferred like something a bit different. Like, how do we get there? And there's no real, like, thinking about it, there's no reasonable way to get a person to turn into an animal.
Well, can she be more like, I mean, maybe not, but can she be more like a Catwoman, like cat-esque without literally being a cat?
I think they could have, yeah. And I think there's ways you could have played with it. And this becomes a tricky part of dealing with comics, right? And comic fans to a certain extent. Because, like, I do think they could have made it less where it's like she looks more humanoid, has claws, has teeth, has features that become feline-esque, but it's not like she's a literal cat person. On a side note, I do think as the effects aren't amazing because I don't think you can make a cat person look amazing regardless. But when people are like, this is like cats, I'm like, yo, I've seen cats twice. This ain't like cats, man. This is better than cats. Don't even know. I've seen that movie two times and So anyway, but that becomes a trick because I would have preferred that. Like she was becoming more ferocious feline looking throughout, which there's another comment I have there, but I would have preferred that journey to continue becoming a cat person, because that is like, I was like, the fight scene, I didn't mind it. I thought the fight scene was fine, but I will say this though, that my favorite thing about Kristen Wiig's transformation, her outfits, and even at the beginning of the movie, her outfit wasn't bad. Like her dorky outfit, I thought was still like, that's still a good outfit. And I think that's the point, is that she wasn't what she thought she was, but like she presented herself in thinking like she's one thing where it's like, your outfit's actually not that bad, man. But like the outfit she gets afterwards as she's going, that one with the like where she's in the White House with the spike jacket and where she has a fur coat at one point, I'm like, oh my God, these outfits are amazing. These outfits are so good.
You know what the key to being evil is? Eyeliner. That's what I've learned in this movie.
That lets you know. Like, if you think I'm a good guy? Well, guess what? Eyeliner.
That's how you knew Jack Sparrow was, you know, like neither good nor bad. Shifty. Because of his eyeliner, it's obviously.
Eyeliner on the top means you're a good guy. Eyeliner on the under eye means you're a bad guy.
That's good to know. That's good.
This is a good tell. And I think just like moving forward in life, I think it's important to keep that in the pocket.
Also, iPhones are a good way of indicators, because in movies, the way, I mean, they may have changed it now, but the way it used to be, the bad guys could never use Apple products because Apple didn't want that. So if a bad guy was using an Android in a movie, they're the bad guy.
yeah, that's good. It's very good.
I do one last thing. Sorry, before we move, if we're about to move on from Cheetah, I do want to say a lot of people comment on the Electro stuff, right? And I don't think performance wise at all. I have to praise Kristen Wiig's performance in this movie, because going in, I thought that was such a weird choice, a comedic actress in a role like this. I'm like, can she pull this off? And to me, she did. I think she did such a good job with the emotion and having her go from like charming Kristen Wiig to like that White House scene where she's just aggressive and like cold. And like, I love that fight scene between her and Wonder Woman. I think it's so great. As Wonder Woman is dodging to save people while Cheetah is trying to harm them, I think that's a phenomenal character moment. So I really liked her performance. I think people, and this is a comparison I've seen where it's like, and I do agree, it goes from like the dorky looking person, you have glasses, to like, now you're not wearing glasses, so therefore you're now hot. And they point,
you're beautiful.
Oh, what was that?
Hold on. Hang on a second. We're all wearing glasses. Let's take them off and let's see if we suddenly become more attractive.
No, I think we can't. Oh, we can't see each other. Is
you guys
what
are
happened.
All so much blurrier.
I actually can't see.
I can see nothing.
I don't know. If a tree falls, you know.
Oh God! Everyone just shakes. This is awful.
If a blind person takes off their glasses, are they hotter? Can they see if they're hotter?
Yeah,
not me.
No, it's, couldn't be me. It's, this is a side note, but it's like in movies, whenever someone who wears glasses all the time and they have to say something dramatic or they need to concentrate, they always take their glasses off. And I'm like, no, you've been wearing your glasses the whole time. Your prescription is probably to the point where if you take that off, you can't see nothing. Like, there's no reason you should be doing this.
Yeah, movies don't really get glasses right, no. typically.
Except for like, Scooby-Doo. So... because Velma, she loses her glasses and she's like, ah, I can do nothing. Like, she literally is like,
I call it like, I call it like the she's all that syndrome where you can take the glasses off, you're the hot person, because that's how, that's exactly she's all that. And it's that it happens in this movie. It happens in a lot of movies, especially with comic book characters.
I'm reluctant to even reveal this in a public forum, but I have a friend who has outlined his strategy for how he'll take me down in a fight. Should we ever come to blows? He's like, I'm just going for your glasses immediately. That's I'm like, damn it, yeah, I'm done.
That's a fair point.
It's over.
I've actually talked about this before, where if any sort of outbreak happens, I need to have a supply of contacts, because glasses would mean I would die very quickly. So I need to have contacts on hand. But jumping backwards, I think what works in this movie for me versus like, so people point to three things that come to mind, many of which are Batman. Catwoman in Batman Returns, Poison Ivy in Batman and Robin, and of course Electro in Amazing Spider-Man 2. So the differences here for me of why this works is, one, the glasses situation is something that happens through evolution, like the people, because of the wish, were paying attention to her even when she had her glasses on. She loses her glasses partway into the movie because of the powers thing. Her eyesight adjusts itself. So people were still paying attention to her and thinking she's attractive even with her glasses, which is a difference from the previously that we're talking about. The other thing is that all the other characters have some sort of weird accident and they completely transform like this. Like, they go from being dorky weirdos to crazy evil immediately. Like, Selina gets pushed out the window. She shows up. She's completely different because she has a nervous breakdown, basically. You have Electro.
Should be noted that there is a Catwoman of sorts in this movie, as well as a villain named Max.
That's true. Oh my gosh.
Which is the case in Batman Returns as well.
Can you imagine Pedro Pascal talking like Christopher Walken?
Christopher Walken as Max Lord would have been next level.
That would have been.
Life is good.
It could be better. granted.
It could be better.
So, in this case, right, Electro is another one where his personality flips like a switch. Same thing with Uma Thurman's Poison Ivy, flips like a switch. This movie doesn't do that. Like, yes, it has the transformation of character, and I agree. Yes, this does do that style of thing, but it does it well, in my opinion, because you see the gradual transformation of this character throughout the piece. She doesn't beat up that guy until halfway into the movie, which structure-wise is usually the point in which your characters have their turning moment. So, and that's also the part where Diana gets shot in the desert chase scene and starts losing her powers and becomes a dramatic thing. So you have these instances where structure-wise, it doesn't happen like a flipped switch. She goes on the journey to becoming this evil person. And I think it works here because they took the time for it. This does also hit to me what you're saying, Jess, about the length. People are saying, like, this movie is two and a half hours long. It's so long. And the length, sure. If you don't like those length of movies, fine. For me, I didn't really feel the length. But also, I think if this movie was shorter, people would complain that it's too short and they didn't develop the characters because they have to cut a bunch of stuff.
You know what else? Because it's streaming, you can pause it.
Yeah. So I think, again, there's a lot happening here where people are in the mood to like hit certain things, but
I don't think it's as simple and straight up. And this is what I was telling you, Kevin, is like, I don't think it's like fair to say that like people don't like this movie purely because the world sucks and everyone's looking for a thing to be angry about. Is it a factor? I think it in many cases it is. Sure. But I think in the cases for some people, like that is playing like a larger percentage than for others. Mm-hmm. But like the more I've lived with the movie in my head, like the more like certain things like start popping out. So like those things definitely exist. And like I think about myself, and we talked about this during the Amazing Spider-Man stuff, is like during the times of those movies, like I wanted them to be good. So I felt like I really liked them. And then time passed and years have passed and like they've deteriorated for me. Do I expect 84 to deteriorate the way that the Amazing Spider-Man movies did? I don't. Do I expect it to deteriorate from the feeling that I had watching it the first time? I do, because it's happening a little bit. But not to a major degree. Like, I still, like, my predominant feeling right now is like, this movie was fine. It was fun. I really loved watching it. I had a good time with certain aspects of it. Like, I had an excellent time with certain aspects of it. Play the song from Sunshine, in the scene in which Wonder Woman rides the lightning, and you know I'm there. And if you didn't know, that piece of music that's playing during that scene where she rides the lightning, it's from the Danny Boyle movie Sunshine, and it's like found its way into so many things because that piece of music is exquisite and exceptional that even in this case, they're like, no, we've got our own original score, but how about that thing from Sunshine? Let's bring that in because that's going to sound really good right here. And you know what? Good choice. They were right. It was an exceptional moment. So there are exceptional moments up and down this movie. I'm walking us too, but that's going to happen. What are you going to do? Let's take a quick break, quick ad break right now. When we come back, let's talk Max Lord in greater detail. Let's get into some feedback. We'll close this thing out. All right. And we are back and got to talk. You know what? Here's the thing, folks. You put a man in a helmet and you make it so that he may not use his face at all for effectively two full seasons of television, with some exceptions. And what do you think is going to happen when he gets that helmet off? He's going to pop off like a rocket. And that's Pedro Pascal as Max Lord. Is chained behind the mask, the man in the iron mask, the Beskar mask, for too long. And Pedro Pascal just goes off as Max Lord. Channeling, I believe he has said his reference point for this was Nicolas Cage. Was what he was aiming for. He got pretty close on that target. There can only be one. But like, if that was like the range that he was going for, I don't think it was a bullseye, but he's like, I don't know terms of darts or archery.
He's darts.
Like, is he in like the yellow? Is the yellow close to the center?
He's there's not bullseye. Like a bullseye, and there's like a ring outside.
He's
of bullseye.
Like a ring outside the bullseye, maybe just like on the outskirts of like the ring outside the ring outside the bullseye. Like, but that's like still like, good points. He's hitting points. And Mike Bloom has done, I don't know if this was something that was already happening, but I've seen Mike Bloom do it a lot of the meme format of Max Lord going, life is good, and then pointing again, but it can be better. As like the new Michael Fassbender, show me the real blank, the real one, perfection. Yeah. Like it's a really excellent meme format. I love this actor so much. I think that the character mostly really worked for me. There are ways in which he didn't work as well as I would have liked. But as somebody who loves a hammy performance, moons over my hammy here with Pedro Pascal. Jess, what did you think of Max Lord?
He was one of my favorite parts of the movie. All of my issues around Max Lord are purely story based, not the actor. I thought he did a fantastic job. Any line read he had was so OTT, and I enjoyed every second of it. Like, I quoted him in the beginning, like, never accept the limitations of nature. Like, yeah. The way he says that line just kills me. His facial expressions, I thought, were fantastic. When he's going insane and he's, like, bleeding out of multiple spots on his face, like, just so good, so over the top. I couldn't have asked for anything more from him. One of the best parts of this movie, I think.
He does that little jig at one point, which was very endearing.
He's incredible. Kevin, your thoughts on Maxwell Lord?
So I ended up really liking this character, and I think it's weird because I'm with Jess also on, like, I think there's a lot of wonkiness with certain parts of the character because of needing things to happen and, like, not fully explaining the Dreamstone and things like that. But the actor does such a good job. It's hard to dislike this character because he's just so charming. As you know, Pedro Pascal is just so charming. The part that I did not expect and that really affected me in ways that I didn't think it would is, so going in, I thought, like, oh, Pedro Pascal being cast as Max Lord, that's interesting. I saw the hair and I was like, that's weird. That's an odd choice. But then the movie actually does explain this and talk about this, and I never expected it to, because it's such an interesting and fascinating thing that I think speaks to, like, me personally. when they reveal the fact that his name is not Max Lord, but in fact, Max Lorenzano, I immediately was just like, huh? And so that aspect of the character, there's so much that he says, because this character represents something I feel like I'm familiar with. And just to jump to the end a little bit, I did not expect to be affected by this as much as I have been. And I've been thinking about it a lot just because there's something about it. But when you show the flashbacks to Max, there's the stuff when he's a kid, you know, and like his dad mm-hmm. being abusive. But when he's there eating the tamale and people are laughing at him, and he has the beaten up shoes because he's poor, and he sees the wealthy white kids, you know, playing and looking successful. And then they cut to him and he's outside. Then this is the scene I'm talking about, when he's there and he's starting his business, right? His little business, and he's all set up. And kudos to Pedro Pascal for selling it. The look on his face, this expression of hope and enthusiasm and excitement, because to him, he's about to start the American dream, and he's going to achieve the American dream because he's Americanized himself. He's made himself into something that's sellable. Hence the name change, hence the hair change, hence all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And people talk about how he looks like Donald Trump. And I do think that's one. Yes, it's a Trump commentary, but also for sure, I think it is a representation of an immigrant making themselves look like what they think the American ideal is supposed to look like. Because at the time, everybody thought Donald Trump was a successful, you know, businessman, but he's also a con man. And so someone making themselves look like this version of what they think America wants. And that really hit me, especially, again, that moment of like starting something from scratch and being like, this is it. This is my time to shine. I'm finally going to be successful and be great. There's an idea of like wanting to be make your family proud, make something of yourself, especially being an immigrant, that I feel like really hit me. And that bizarre motivation, I think, really works for that character and really compels into what he's doing. Like, there's a scene where he gets into the elevator and you see his smiling face like drop into sadness. And I absolutely get that kind of sadness. The envy that comes with like essentially being a failure and having to smile your way through it. Like, I understand that. I get it. And like, there's parts where he talks about like, if you dream it, you can achieve it. You can have it all. You just have to want it. That is the American dream. That is what they state. That's what they keep mm-hmm. saying. And so like, that part of this character really, really, really worked for me. I think it just hit me specifically because of so much about that spoke to me and parts of my family being immigrants and my mom starting a business herself. Like, there's a lot in there that I think so well worked for the character that the wonkiness that I do know exists almost gets overshadowed by that part, because I think that part was done so bizarrely well, even though it was so small, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I just wish they had like planted those seeds a little bit earlier. I think it felt rushed by the time that they did it. I think we could have had moments where, like you said, he looks sad or whatever, and we flash back to one of those. I don't think they needed to put them all at the end, because I think that it makes us connect with the character more if we see them earlier on. I think it's, you still get the same, a similar end result in that you feel for him, right? And you feel for, and you understand why then he gives up everything to go to his son. It makes sense. But I think if we get those a couple nuggets earlier on, then it's more impactful than it is shoved at the end of the film,
for sure,
where we're already like 2 hours, 20 minutes into this movie.
But I think that I hear that for sure. I think I mostly agree. I think one way in which I disagree is, and I think for me, a lot of it is carried because I love the actor so much. I just mm-hmm. love Pedro Pascal. He's never let me down in a single thing I've seen him in. He's just so fun. And he's so in it, you know, he's a very committed actor. And he could do like really serious drama. He can do comedy. Like, he has a really impressive range as a performer. And because I'm in the tank with Pedro Pascal, like, there is a part of me that is like along for the ride with him, no matter what. Like, I'm kind of just like feeling whatever he's putting down. Like, I'm there with him. And so like, there's almost like an aspect of me that like against my better instincts, like I'm like almost rooting for him in a certain way. And I think that like when people are like calling him a loser at the start of the movie, and it's so clear that he's such a fraud, and the way in which he's reacting to that, and the fact that he has like, you know, he's got his whole floor that is derelict, and he's got his kid for the weekend, and you know, he's losing track of stuff. That like I'm already starting to feel for him with that combined with the actor. So by the time that they get to the end and really put the point on it at that point, like that was really sad for me. Like it got really emotional. And I don't know if that reaction that I ended up having for it would have played differently if I had a little more to go on from him in the beginning. Like it's I think this is very like personal, subjective, taste dependent, that for me I'm glad that I didn't have it, but I can see that being a very different case for different people.
I don't have as much like empathy for him in the beginning, just him and his son and everything. I kind of just feel like, wow, you're like a jerk and your poor kid like is just like, and especially when he is like yelling like, oh, what, I have him this weekend, and the poor kid can hear everything. And that I just don't have as much. I get it. I do think you're right. I think it's completely subjective. And I think I just didn't have as much empathy for the guy in the beginning. And maybe if they'd planted those seeds along the way, instead of just hitting me like a ton of bricks at the end, I feel it and it grows. Yeah, you know?
I think I agree about the like, but that was also when the turn was coming, right? Like when he's starting to become someone else, when he's starting to lose the parts of it, is where he was mad about the Alistair part.
He's like bleeding from every orifice. Yeah. Like,
I mean, he's
just
still
like
a jerk
like
to
shit.
His kid earlier on.
Sort of, yeah. Like, it's weird because like, I don't disagree, but that scene also again bizarrely read different for me. I think just because like at that point they had established a little bit of it. They established that the Max Lorenzano thing, and like the way he was talking to his kid again, like really spoke to me in a weird way of like, I'm working really hard to make you proud and to make a good life for you so that you don't have to do what I have to do, in a way, right? Like that was the almost subtle intent of where it probably started. Where it ended up is completely different. And I think even then where it ended up, he lost himself even before he made the wish. So like those little things. And I think that again, it is completely subjective and completely personal, because I think that moment hit me because of my personal experience. It won't necessarily hit everyone. And I think that's okay. I think that's fine. But like, I definitely see what you're saying. I do think that one shot again of that small business, I think, is good at the end, because it just hit me in such a like personal way. And I think it is good to have that there. And I will say something interesting I caught though, and they never talk about it or fully explain it away, or like, and it's left in a very like, not to say open interpretation, but like very bizarre thing, is the ending of the movie. Some people I saw talk about, and even, you know, my fiance mentioned the idea that like he flips his wish because he remembers like, oh, his kid's in trouble, and he remembers his love for his kid and stuff like that. It kind of works, but she was like, it felt just like very, very like, you know, oh yeah, now he's good again in this moment. But watching this movie again, something I caught that I didn't see before, when he is with Alistair at one point and he does have the Dreamstone and he's granting wishes to people, Alistair starts to say like, I wish you would like, I wish you would be with me. I wrote it down somewhere, but he starts to say like, I wish that you would, you know, be with me and not, you know, off in your business and stuff. And like Max pushes him away. And so instead, Alistair touches his leg and says, I do wish for you to be great. Like I do wish for your greatness. That, I think, somewhat explains what happens at the end to Max, because that kid's wish was supposed to come true. And so Max remembering that stuff with his kid, I think, is a subtle way of the wish happening, because the beginning of the movie talks about greatness not being what you think it is. And greatness isn't being powerful and all this stuff. You can be great in other ways. So I don't think it's necessarily explicitly stated, but I do think that turn of Max happening isn't necessarily Max fully himself. I do think it's a part of the Dreamstone working its magic, because that's what Alistair wished when he had that moment.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, and he didn't renounce it. Nope. Like, I also don't understand the renouncing of the wish.
Yeah, that part's weird.
So, because like, if everybody Max doesn't renounce, I guess it doesn't matter.
Does Max have to be the one who renounces his wish? And because he renounces his wish, everybody's wishes are negated,
right?
Because he's no longer the stone.
I think that's what happened. But I also think, like,
but it was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when they said, like, oh, like, the person with the missiles, it was like, oh, then the missile explodes. And then it was like, when people start renouncing, things start changing.
Yeah. I think, like, for me, I feel like Max renouncing his wish reversed a lot of it. But any wishes that happened before could continue, which means that that's why I think Barbara actually still does have her, her powers.
Yeah, like, if it predates him becoming the thing.
She never, we never see her renounce her wish personally, so I do think Barbara still has superpowers.
But she's just not the cheetah then.
She's not a cheetah person because that Barbara came from Max.
With the powers.
That guy still has his coffee, so he didn't like throw up his coffee back, so he still got that, so I think that
how
guy's
pissed
fine.
Would you be if that's how you wasted your wish on a stupid cup of coffee?
Hey, so what's gonna happen to all the Porsches?
Oh, I do love that. What is it you and your people in Porsches?
Oh my god.
You know, there were aspects of this was a funny movie. Like, there were some things about the movie, especially because, like, you know that the world isn't going to end and, like, things are going to be okay and it's Wonder Woman and she's going to be the badass, awesome Wonder Woman that we know her to be and she's going to fix things in some capacity. So, like, when shit's going wild in DC and, like, there's Porsches all over, like, the fact that there were Porsches all over the street and, like, you keep seeing them and you hear, like, that one, like, there's Porsches all over DC. Like, that cracked me up so hard. Like, there were just some moments in this that I thought were really funny. That,
I think my favorite line is actually from Steve, and it's when they're, you know, taking the jet, and he does the, like, and she's like, oh no, radar, and he's just like, are they gonna shoot at us? Well, it's shit, like, Diana! I just lost it. It was such a great read.
Yeah, I think that was like one of the only moments that I was like, oh, okay, I kind of see your worth now like why you're here.
Yeah.
Because like I said, like the cheesy, like the wardrobe like scene, it was fine. And I love the cheesy 80s wardrobe.
Should have been better.
It could have been so much better.
The wardrobe scene was good. It can be better.
It could have like throw on some 80s music and it would have been great. The escalator thing was a bit silly, but
I think that's Wonder Woman 1984. I think ultimately that's my review. Wonder Woman 1984 was good. It can be better. And that's fine. That's totally fine. And that doesn't like take away from like, again, a lot of it for me was like feeling vibe stuff and like getting a movie that ultimately has like a hopeful message and ultimately is just like pretty fluffy and light. Like every movie doesn't have to be Chris Nolan. Like every movie doesn't have to be even like a super serious, intense Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. I think I would put this lower than most of the MCU movies for me. You know, there's a couple that I think it would rise past, obviously, like Iron Man 2,
Incredible Hulk.
Iron Man 2, Incredible Hulk, Thor the Dark World. I think I'd have this higher than Doctor Strange. I don't know that I would have it higher than anything else off the top of my head. I mean, I think I would have it pretty close to on par with like the next for the MCU for me.
Ultimately, like if
I think it's Age of Ultron.
If we do our scoring system, like I gave Wonder Woman 1 like a 5, right? Like I feel like I'd probably give a 4. Like that's probably where I'd end up on the scale. Like,
yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Near the middle, but leaning towards the better end for me. I mean, and that's sort of where I land in terms of the score itself. But yeah, there is just fun stuff. Like there's such like little things.
It was good. It could be better, but it was good.
The beginning of the movie when Wonder Woman first shows up and makes her appearance, she literally smashes through the glass ceiling, which I thought was such a brilliant like little thing. Like he's dangling the girl over the ledge and she smashes through the glass ceiling. I'm like, yeah, that's fun. And then she throws that little girl into the teddy bear, like slides her across. Like that was really fun. Her whole interaction at the beginning with the mall robbers, I thought was a very like funny, like, you know, good action. I actually really liked it as an action sequence as well.
Also, I'm going to throw out a spicy take here. I feel like Diana should have won the foot race in the beginning because, like, she was innovative. She was creative. Oh. You know, she fell off. She like, cheated slightly, I suppose. But I was like, let her
Diana
wins
immunity. Like, we were really.
Except she didn't do the one thing she's supposed to. Like, there's one thing, because, like, you're like she was innovative, but, like, very clearly you're supposed to, like, hit those little markers. She didn't hit the marker. Yeah. She, like, went back and like hit the marker and then kept going. Like,
I think that would be different. Yeah, you did forget a rule.
I suppose.
You're hitting Russell Hand's territory now. You have to follow the rules to win. You can't just be like, if the rules were different, I would have won.
This is just my evil side coming out. I'm like, give her the win.
I loved her being like, what the
I won.
You
idiot. I would have been pissed too if I was her. I would have been pissed because I was ahead the whole time. And I'm like, you know, half the size of these other ladies.
That was when she's all lined up and there's like the like tall, fully grown Amazons. And then her like tiny little Diana was just such a great visual. I also loved that scene. Like we didn't get a lot of Themyscira in this one for obvious reasons. But I loved the beginning. Like I thought the return to like see that world was so great. great, and like the visuals are just so bright and like colorful and green, and like having them do like that obstacle course was really fun. I really liked a lot about the Themyscira stuff.
Yeah.
I think my one complaint is that they didn't have any kangaroos. Like, they were riding horses, but as comic book fans would know, on Paradise Island, they actually ride kangaroos. And Wonder Woman,
I didn't know that.
Wonder Woman has a pet kangaroo named Jumpa. Because
missed opportunity,
right? Like, this is the thing. Like, there was
now all I want to see,
guys. Now in this era of comic books,
this movie sucks.
Right? Can you? I just wish I had a visual of that. Like, this era of comic books, every superhero basically like had a pet. Like, everyone knows Crypto, which is like Superman's, but like Batman had like Ace the Bat Hound, Aquaman had Topo, who was an octopus. Wonder Woman had Jumpa, which is like the kangaroo. Like, it was a thing. This was like a thing in the time period where like every hero needed like their own little pet. It was very fun, but I decided not to.
Let's get into some feedback. Lots of feedback to get through. This is from Professor Strunk. Strunk says, this one's tough. Going in, I really wanted to love it, but leaving it, I thought it was good, not great. I love that it didn't end with a brawl between Wonder Woman and Max Lord. Like Doctor Strange's use of Dormammu, the movie had a unique conclusion that didn't rely on Wonder Woman punching her way out. I also enjoyed the build-up to Wonder Woman's moral decision to renounce her wish and once more say goodbye to Steve Trevor. I found Pedro Pascal's villain to be pretty cool. I also really liked Kristen Wiig as the Cheetah, but I should say I really disliked the introduction of her character. Why were people all mean to her for no reason? Why is she such a sad sack? It reminded me of Electro in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. My biggest complaint is that the beginning and middle were slow. The movie was very light on action. Ultimately, some movies are better on a rewatch because once you know what the movie contains and what it's about, you can better appreciate what it is. Wonder Woman 1984 is one of those movies for me. That's what Strunk says. This comes our way from the great Riley Wigmore. Riley writes in, I just want to say that I adored this movie. I loved it. I know there are issues with it. It's definitely overlong, and there's some pacing issues, and maybe the Steve stuff is hit or miss, but maybe some find the end, and maybe some find the ending cheesy, but for me, the cheese stuff works. Put that on a shirt. The cheese stuff works. The movie as a whole works for me. I can see some issues, but they aren't issues for me. I loved the movie. It reminded me again of the classic Superman films mixed with a bit of Raimi sensibility, of movies that embrace the heart and the cheese. For some superhero stories, this movie is just fun, plain, and simple. Kevin, you and Riley got into it in the Discord. Not like into it, but like the two of you were going back and forth. Any takeaways from that conversation to be had here on the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this was like very shortly after we had watched it when the criticisms were coming out. And I think Riley and I talking about it was that first moment too of like him and I both like not digging our heels, but like leaning into like, what is happening right now? What is going on? Like, you know, we look at like, we think everything is going good. We look outside and there's, you know, Porsches everywhere. And like, it's all chaos and pandemonium out there. So we were both like a bit not understanding what was happening. We had a good conversation about like why we liked it and the things that worked for us. And like, you know, the expectations of this film, and this film did have a lot of expectations it needed to live up to. But in terms of as a movie, again, it was fine. It was enjoyable. I liked the movie.
It was a movie.
But yeah, it's not like, you know, yeah, it's not as bad as people were making it out to be.
From Chris Brannigan, Chris writes in, my biggest issues with the film were the tone. I feel Marvel has found a great balance of seriousness and comedy in their films, and I think Wonder Woman failed on this. We went from the Themyscira scene where Diana could be learning important lessons to a slapstick comedy fight in the mall, then back to seriousness in the next scene. Difficult juxtaposition. Jess, do you feel that at all? Like, did you feel any kind of like whiplashiness with the tone of the movie, or was that not a big factor for you?
It wasn't a huge factor for me. I gotta be honest, I didn't really understand the mall scene. I mean, I was kind of like, where are we? Like, I didn't exactly understand what was going on. No, I just think the pacing was a bit off more than the tone changed too much for me. It didn't really devolve into silliness on that much beyond like the fashion show segment.
Yeah. Kevin,
yeah,
I guess you don't really feel that, right?
No, I didn't feel tonal whiplash, like, especially compared to like other movies where there is just shifts in tone. Like, throw it back to actually what I mentioned earlier, Hunchback of Notre Dame. I think the biggest issue with that film on a rewatch for me is the tone, because to me that movie is a lot of seriousness, and then all of a sudden you have these gargoyles, and one of them voiced by Costanza over there, George Costanza, Jason Alexander, and it's just like, that is a tonal whiplash, because like you have this like dark and serious moments. I don't think the mall sequence is good. Like, I think it works well considering we came from an action sequence where they're going and doing weird spinny pendulum moments and like all this other weird stuff to like a fun mall action sequence. I think it works. I didn't feel like a crazy tonal whiplash. I think if they went full, because like the mall sequence wasn't slapstick, if they did go full slapstick, that is a tonal whiplash for me. Like that's a weird tonal shift. I really didn't feel it that much here at all compared to like other stuff, in my opinion. Yeah. Again, mileage varies person to person.
Tom Palmer has a take that aligns with what you were saying earlier, Jess. Tom says, wanted more 80s music. And I think it's fair when the movie's marketing itself is taking place in the 80s to expect more 80s music, is Tom's take.
Especially when you have all of the, again, iconic outfits. Like, I cannot express to you how badly I wanted to be Diana when she went to that party in that white ball gown. And I was like, if I could just, like, body snatch your body for, like, one moment and that dress, I would wear that. Because it was gorgeous. Like, everything about the wardrobe was 80s, like the vest with the belt and the pants and the everything was working for me. I just like, you expect some 80s hits.
I do agree. Like, I do think, like you said, I think one would have been great. Like, I think going overboard is where the danger lies. Bizarrely though, I feel like the other stuff about this movie in terms of like as an 80s film, I think works incredibly, incredibly well. Like, again, I agree about the music. I think they could have had one or two, but like, The fashion, I think, was on point, but also specifically of the right time period. There wasn't as much neons, which is actually more of a late 80s, early 90s look. So, like, I think the fashion really hit the look and, again, the style of the movie, right? This felt like a movie that is mimicking the style of films from the 80s. And I think that's really clever and really smart. And hits a weird thing where it's just like, people talk about being nostalgic for the 80s, but like, this is kind of what the 80s were when it came to movies. Like, and maybe you're only nostalgic for certain things from the 80s. But I do think the other thing that I really like about it is that this is an interesting comparison I thought about. Back to the Future, a film made in 1984, looks like this movie in terms of fashion and style and how it just looks. It looks like the parts where Marty is in 1984. When people talk about like stuff from the 80s, a lot of times they go to Stranger Things. Stranger Things, and again, I like seasons 1 and 3 of Stranger Things. Stranger Things feels like Back to the Future 2, where he goes to the 80s cafe, where it's a mishmash of just things from the 80s that people like. And it felt more just like, hey, remember this from the 80s? And they're all in the same place. So like, one of them feels like Stranger Things is a nostalgia for the 80s. This to me just felt like the 80s, which is, I think, an interesting contrast.
This is from Troy, the great DJLK, who writes in all, I would have been fine to see this in a theater and wouldn't have been mad, but I'm glad I could be at home and scroll Twitter during the long, unnecessarily drawn out parts. And I actually want to totally disagree with that. I really wish that I'd seen this in a theater. I miss theaters so much. And I think that like, there would have been like just like the pops of color, like the fireworks scene. Like I would have loved to have been in a movie theater just sipping a soda, watching that stuff. I really did miss that. I don't know where we're going in terms of like the death of cinema. You know, are we ever going back to theaters or will we be going back to theaters in the same way? Like, who knows? Ask us in 2 years, right? But I really miss it. And this movie made me miss that in a pretty significant way. I was kind of surprised by that. That was like an active thought that I had while watching the movie, which I think might be why like sort of the lighter tone and like the hopeful message hit me. Cause like that stuff was like actually actively bumming me out. And then like, the idea of like, you have to make sacrifices in order to like move forward in life. It's like, oh yeah, we have to sacrifice going to theater so we can go back to theater.
Someday. Do you miss theaters, Jess?
We weren't really big moviegoers to begin with. Like we, every once in a while we'll do like a dinner and a movie thing, but it's not something that we did so often that I miss it. We bought ourselves like a screen and a projector to do at home drive-ins like 2 years ago. So we were doing that a lot during the summer, when we really couldn't go anywhere because it was at least something to do where it felt different. And that I actually really enjoy. There is something about watching a movie on a big screen. And we went to, I prefer drive-ins to movie theaters, if I'm being honest. I don't really like
to. I think I've ever been to a drive-in.
Oh, you need to go.
Yeah, I'd love to.
It's a really good time. And you're not close to people, which I prefer not to be even without COVID. And you don't have to worry about people being annoying as much. You still have the one-offs. But we saw Jurassic Park and E.T. in the drive-ins over the summer.
That's fun.
And that was like, can you imagine a better movie to watch in a drive-in theater besides Jurassic Park? Like, it's epic on a big screen.
It would be scary to watch the car scene.
I was going
to
say, that's what makes it great.
You gotta put a glass of water.
Yeah. I make you nervous. I'd get anxious. I'd have a panic attack for sure. Yeah, I mean, so we got, you know, bonus scores from the peeps, people who are sending in their scores. No one exceeded a 5. No one hit a 5. The highest we had was a 4.9. The lowest we had was a 2.5. And I actually think that that range is really fair. I think that that range of like between a 2.5 to a 4.9, I think speaks to the people who loved the movie and then speaks to like about as low as I would feel like you could reasonably go with the movie. I don't know. It just might be that, like, I watched, like, my brother, like, live blogging the movie from a distance and being like, what are you talking about? Are you, you idiot. But like, that might just be me. I think you could be on the lower end of this too, but like, it would be hard for me to like figure out like what's the excusable reason to be like in the ones on this, if we're going by like a 6-point scale. If that's you, I don't think we heard from you. So feel free to, you know, to write that out. I think we're moving on so that the timing is off.
or you can
hit us up in the Discord if you want. If you're a member of the Patreon and you're at the Discord level, go to the Everything is Super channel, hit us up. Cause I don't think we really got that take, too much of that anyway, personally, that I saw. But yeah, I don't think I've got anything further on 84. I was happy to watch it. I was glad for a new movie. I really loved the experience. I think Kevin, a 4 out of 6 is probably about where I land. That could degrade or increase with more time and thought to it. I don't think I'm going to think about it too much, you know, for a while, which maybe says something. That's where I'm at with it ultimately. Jess, do you have any final takes?
No, I would say I'm probably about a 3.5 if I had to put a number on it. I mean, like I said, I saw problems in the movie that I didn't, the story was a little wonky for me. The actors largely make up for that. That's kind of where that 3.5 is coming from, is largely the actors' performances I thought were fantastic. And some of those characters are really fleshed out in a really nice way. Yeah, it was fine. Like I said, if you're looking for a movie to watch, I mean, now you probably already watched it if you're listening to this, but it's fine.
Yeah. Kevin, any parting thoughts?
I really like the action in this movie. I don't think it's as good as the first one because I think the action scenes of that were out of control good. But I do like the action. I like the mall scene. I think the desert scene was awesome. Her, like, you know, basically it's a car chase, except she is acting like a car, I think is great. I love that entire sequence. I really loved the fight in the White House. I thought that was fantastic as well. Like I mentioned, I think there's something great and such a character moment of Kristen Wiig basically trying to kill these guards and her desperately trying to like save them as their one's about head's about to get bashed in. So she grabs the back of them or like pulls a chair over, I think is really awesome. So I really liked all of that. We kind of mentioned it, but like the scene of her flying when she first takes flight is phenomenal. That is such a great scene. Mm-hmm. And it is like one of those things where I'm just like, oh man, if only I could see a Superman scene like this. Like again, one of those moments. I do think Man of Steel came close. I do think Man of Steel came close to like having a good Superman takes flight scene, but this was so spectacular and so wonderful. That scene was such like very well done and well shot. And the music, as you said, Josh, I think really helped for that.
And I also should say, speaking of music, this is the most I liked the modern Wonder Woman theme because they didn't bust out the stupid electric guitar. And so maybe it was just a matter of instrumentation for me because when they were like orchestrating it, I was into it. But
guitar just reminds you of your good friend.
With that
your
good stupid friend. Electric guitar riff. Get out of here with that. So I'm glad that they took the note and ditched it. Very happy about that. All right. That's Wonder Woman 1984. That's Everything is Wonderful. Now it's Everything is Wonderful. We are moving into WandaVision, is the next focus of the Everything is Super podcast. We'll be back next week just talking about those characters, expectations for the show, just general preview. If you've got feedback for that, anything you're looking forward to with the return of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, expectations for like, you know, we're at the kickoff of Phase 4. officially. So if you've got thoughts about that, especially knowing what we know now about the plans for the future of the MCU, 10 new projects just this year, which is insanity, hit us up. This is the perfect time to do that. Super@postshowrecaps.com. Or if you are a member of the Patreon, you can hit us up in the Discord. And if you're not a member of the Patreon, might I add, now is a perfect time to consider signing up. It's the start of a new year. It's the start of the month. It's always the best time to sign up for the Patreon. And what's more, we actually now have an option where you can sign up for an annual membership. You can pay for the full year. There's an 8% discount. That's a full month off. So if that sounds attractive to you as an option, you can explore it. Go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps, where we've got not just the incredible Discord community where people are interacting with all of us hosts and with each other and talking about the podcasts well beyond the podcast itself. It's also the home for lots of great exclusive podcasting, such as the Lord of the Rings series that we're doing on Post Show Recap Theater this month. We're talking about the entirety of Lord of the Rings. Just joined me talking about The Wilds, the Amazon show for Watching with Wiggler. And of course, Jess, we podcast about community on the Community Building podcast, which some have said, Jess, that the most recent episode of Community Building, best podcast of the year. Don't at me.
There's a lot of time for it to be beat.
You know, but I appreciate this podcast is recording. It's January 3rd.
take the award and go. Take the award and just go.
You know, so we're going to take that. We're going to leave. Mm-hmm. So lots of reasons to sign up for the Patreon. Here in the main feed, beyond everything that's cooking up for Everything Is Super, we are embarking on a new Star Wars adventure. We're going to be announcing the new Star Wars podcast this week. Keep an ear out for that for all the details on what we plan on doing over the next few months, next several months, in fact, talking about Star Wars on a regular basis. Down the Hatch is officially at the midpoint of Lost, Kevin. We just finished season 3. We're stopping down for a season 3 feedback special. We had to go back, and so far we're not regretting it.
I think, well, so which one's the time travel season? Is that 5?
Nah, that's 5.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, you got a while to go for the actual good season again.
Yeah. Oh, you like that season.
I love the time travel season.
Oh, great.
If the show had just peaced out on season 5, we'd be fine.
Great. I'm so happy to hear it. So we've got a really fun podcast over at Down the Hatch. And of course, there's the Stand coverage. There's Star Trek Disco. Kevin and I, as we mentioned, we were on Aang In There this week. Just a million bajillion things happening on Post Show Recaps. A great time to be a part of this community. Jess Sterling, speaking of community, what do you got going on in your podcast universe besides community?
I was going to say, besides the 3 podcasts I've done with you this weekend, we have over at Shit 90s Shows Taught Me, we have Dawson's Creek coming out. I think it'll already be out by the time this comes out on Monday. We're starting with that show. We did the pilot. It was a lot of fun. Sarah's never seen it. So we're not, it's a spoiler free if you want to watch with us for the first time. It's now on Hulu and Netflix. And then we're continuing our Boy Meets World journey. We're heading towards the end of season 1. Corey's becoming a teenager. So that's a lot of fun for us to handle.
How's that going for him? Is he doing okay?
His voice is changing and it's noticeable. Poor guy. We talk about how much of a zaddy Alan Matthews is.
He's so good. Like, Alan Matthews is so great.
So attractive.
And he gets sidelined for the comedy bits, which it sucks because this is such a great, I loved what they did early on in season 1, I think still season 2, of like the father-son stuff with Alan and him is just...
It's so good. It's so good. And like as a kid, of course, I'm like, oh, Eric's such a heartthrob. As an adult, I'm like, Daddy Alan is here. So we talk about that a lot.
Amazing.
So you can catch us on most podcast apps and we're
Boy
on Twitter,
Meets
Instagram.
World meets you where you are, Jess.
There you go. And, it's at Shit 90s Pod if you want to catch us.
Cool. And at the Jess Sterling on
That's
Twitter.
That's correct. The one and only, yes.
And Kevin is at Kev Mahadeo on Twitter. And I'm at Round Howard if you want to at Chris Pine in Round Howard's Twitter account. That is how you will be able to do that. Next week, I will return Josh Wiggler's body to Josh Wiggler. Until then, this is Chris Pine signing out.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.